to headlines: more Palestinians die of hunger and dehydration as the Israeli regime's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip enters its 153rd day. China says a deadly Israeli onslaught on Gaza is a tragedy for humankind and a disgrace for civilization, calling for an immediate ceasefire. And also in our headlines, the U.S. military confirms a missile attack on a commercial ship in the Gulf of Aden as the Yemeni army continues to target Israeli-bound vessels. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital Tehran. This is World News. A top story for this half hour: Israel's indiscriminate attacks continue to claim more Palestinian lives after 5 months into the regime's genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip. At least six people were killed in airstrikes and shootings by Israeli forces who targeted civilians in central Gaza. In the west of Gaza City, Israeli forces once again opened fire on Palestinian civilians waiting for aid trucks, killing at least five people and injuring over 20 others. Meanwhile, malnutrition and dehydration continue to wreak havoc on the Palestinian population. A 15-year-old teenager and a 72-year-old man have died in two hospitals due to lack of food and water. Gaza's medical sources say the number of people dying of malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza has surged to 20, that is, more than 30,700 Gazans, most of them women and children, have been killed since the Israeli onslaught started early last October. Jamie McGoldrick, UN Humanitarian Coordinator for the Occupied Palestinian Territories, has warned of serious acute malnutrition in northern parts of Gaza. He says UN will assess on Thursday how it can use an Israeli military-controlled road to deliver more humanitarian aid to desperate Palestinians.
Hunger has reached catastrophic levels, and especially in the north of Gaza, which we haven't served for weeks. And yesterday's convoy attempt was again disrupted because of the ransacking of that and the insecurity. Their children are now, as we see in the images on the media, who are dying of hunger-related diseases. And in order to prevent that from happening, we have to have a plan that allows us to, you know, prevent famine. That we need to significantly scale up the humanitarian assistance in there. And that would be that, you know, we have to use this military road, this fence road at the side, on the eastern side, to allow material to come from the crossing point at Kerem Shalom and Rafah, all the way up to the north and into the north. This road runs parallel to the edge of Gaza Strip. It's on the eastern side, and it's a road that the military use their own supply lines and deliver, you know, moving in. They have a number of crossing points into below Karni. There's a place called Berry, which is the crossing point they'll probably use. The idea would be that you get the trucks scanned, and there'll be 14 or 15 trucks from WFP will be scanned. They go outside onto the road, and then they enter into this route. I think it's called Route 93 or 96, and then you go north on that road. There is no traffic on that road other than military traffic, and we have to get up at least 300 trucks a day. Right now, we're lucky if we're getting about 150. And so to address those issues properly, we have to do that. And these other options like airdrops, these are helpful, but these are not going to address the significant needs, which can only be done by road transport. And that's something we have to do. And it's when you get a time like Ramadan coming up, it pulls into focus how desperate people find themselves in. So I think people are looking for a way to get back to something normal, something more stable and something more certain. And hopefully that will happen in the near future, and hopefully that we get some sort of pause which will allow us to stabilize people's health, people's food security.
Political analyst Jeff Aramini joined us with his take on the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza, especially starvation that is being used as a weapon by the Israeli regime against Palestinians.
Since the beginning of this latest war against the Palestinian people, they are very open about it. No food, no water, no medicine, no fuel, no electricity, nothing will go into Gaza, which is a call, an open call for a genocide. And every single country in the world is still saying Israel has a right to defend itself. Even when Israel killed 119 people last week who were queuing for food out of starvation and thirst, the United States still used their veto at the Security Council to condemn this killing of Palestinians in cold blood because of the language. They were not happy with the language that was used. On top of that, the so-called civilized Western powers, when they talk about Gaza, Palestine, and the Israelis, their main concern is always the release of the Israeli hostages. No talk of the Palestinian hostages and prisoners who are languishing in Israeli jails for years without charge. And while America is at the helm, Israel will continue to get away with murder, because starvation, using food and water and medicine as a weapon of war, is a war crime and a crime against humanity.
The Chinese foreign minister says his country supports the full UN membership of a Palestinian state, urging other members of the Security Council to refrain from creating any obstacle to the issue.
China firmly supports the just cause of the Palestinian people to restore their legitimate national rights and has always been committed to a comprehensive and lasting solution to the Palestinian issue. We support Palestine's membership as full United Nations member state and call on certain Security Council members not to set obstacles to this.
Wang Yi also called the ongoing deadly Israeli onslaught on Gaza a tragedy for humankind and a disgrace for civilization. He reiterated Beijing's calls for an immediate ceasefire, saying there are no justifications for continuation of war and no excuses for the killing of civilians. The top Chinese diplomat said that historical injustices suffered by the Palestinian people cannot continue for generations without being corrected. Beijing has always been sympathetic to the Palestinian cause and supportive of a two-state solution. A Palestinian delegation is in New York to meet with the UN chief and the president of the Security Council to highlight Gaza's catastrophic conditions. Two medics accompanying the group recount their harrowing experience and loss of their family members during a presser held alongside the Palestinian envoy to the UN. Let's take a listen.
You guys heard it in TVs and everything, but honestly, we lived every single day for 13 days in Gaza, and it wasn't easy. You saw all what you're going to hear this. I saw it in my eyes, and I've treated patients, and I cried every single day. And thank God that I came back here to at least be their voice, not my voice, their voice. I'm a maxillofacial surgeon. I lived in the state. I volunteer on a mission, so I joined a mission recently to the European hospital in Gaza. I stayed there for 2 weeks. We lived at the hospital. We treated a lot of patients. We, as a group, we treated more than 200 patients. Myself, I treated 16 surgeries. It's not the surgeries you've done, it's the amount of displaced people and the active refugee camp that I lived in. People live in the tents, live in the floor, live in the wards.
Since the 7th of October, my family members, over 150 of them, have been murdered by Israel's brutal assault on Gaza, either by Israeli bombardment, snipers, or the cruel and ruthless denial of humanitarian aid, with no access to clean water, with food, equitable healthcare services. Thousands more have been tormented with horrific injuries, forced starvation, trauma, and displacement to evacuation camps and catastrophic living conditions. In December, one of our family members, Sabri Al-Farra, was murdered in his home by an Israeli airstrike with his 9 young children. His unfortunate wife survived. She was 8 months pregnant. She was displaced to an evacuation camp where she gave birth to her baby boy 1 month later in January. Her child, her newborn infant, died 20 days later from the cold and the harsh conditions in the camps. Today, none of us are here for condolences. We're not here for apologies. We're here for immediate action. We have demonstrated that every minute signifies the loss of a life, the starvation of a child. And so we need an immediate and permanent, not temporary, permanent ceasefire now.
U.S. Central Command has confirmed Wednesday's missile attack on a commercial ship by the Yemeni army in the Gulf of Aden. CENTCOM said in a statement that three crew members were killed and four others wounded after Barbados-flagged vessel. True Confidence was struck with anti-ship ballistic missiles. The Yemeni army has already taken responsibility, saying the attack was in response to the American and British aggression against Yemen. Spokesman for the army Yahya Sarei said the vessel owned by the U.S. was targeted after it ignored multiple warnings. However, the ship's operators say the vessel was not American. Yemeni forces first launched their operations against Israeli or Israeli-bound ships in the Red Sea in solidarity with Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Recently, they've intensified their attacks on British and U.S. ships in retaliation for the two countries' aggression against Yemen. Moving on now, in the UK, government ministers are considering expanding the definition of extremism and banning members of parliament from engaging with protest groups. Among them, pro-Palestine march organizers, human rights campaigners say the move is an insult to democracy, Said Kuruza reports.
The right to speak out, to protest, the very fabric of democratic rights, once again under attack in the UK, as the government updates its definition of extremism and is about to introduce a potential ban on parliamentarians joining protests. Recommendations from the government's advisor on political violence, John Woodcock, also known as Lord Walney, who is a former chair of Labour Friends of Israel, call on leaders of the mainstream political parties to instruct their MPs to employ a zero-tolerance approach to groups that use disruptive tactics or fail to stop, quote, hate on marches. In the crosshairs, climate activist groups such as Extinction Rebellion and Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who have organized the enormous peaceful mobilizations for Gaza since October last year.
This is an affront to democracy and an indication of a weak and decaying government's descent into authoritarianism. It's totally out of touch with the British people and actually very much out of keeping with the British values that they claim to champion.
Ahead of Walney's recommendations, and after the by-election in Rochdale, Greater Manchester, that handed pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway a thumping victory, a speech by the Prime Minister vilifying the pro-Palestinian protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza.
In recent weeks and months, we have seen a shocking increase in extremist disruption and criminality. What started as protests on our streets has descended into intimidation, threats, and planned acts of violence.
Critics say comments like those about peaceful demonstrations are a threat to the long tradition of freedom of protest and expression in the country.
His assertions are totally false. I mean, you know, the claims of an increase in anti-Semitism, of extremism, there is no evidence for that. I mean, this is just pure invention and another indication, frankly, of how weak this government really is. To have a special address to the nation as if there was some sort of state of emergency. Some people that spoke to me thought that we'd declared war on Russia. What it was George Galloway, the leader of the Workers' Party, getting elected as a Member of Parliament. I mean, that should be celebrated, not attacked in that way. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
The new changes are yet to be announced and legislated, but the political temperature is rapidly rising in the UK.
In its 2024 World Report, Human Rights Watch says that the UK government's practices and policies have severely curtailed domestic human rights protections. Others say the country is at risk of turning into a police state masquerading as a democracy. The question now is, how deep will those erosions go? And will the MPs in the building behind me allow them to continue? Syed Pourreza, London.
Latest polls are showing that radical right parties are poised to secure the top position in several European countries at the next EU elections in June. Many have lost faith in the European Union and its ability to work for the common good of all Europeans. Our correspondent Max Chiudi reports from Rome.
According to the latest European Council on Foreign Relations think tank's forecast for the 2024 European Parliament elections, there will be a major shift to the right in many member states in the June vote. The forecast also indicates that populist radical right parties are likely to gain votes and seats across the European Union, while centre-left and green parties will be losing votes and seats.
far-right formations are poised to secure the top position in 9 countries, including Austria, France, Italy and Poland.
The risk that right and far-right formation will change the face of the EU at the next elections in June is dramatically high. Domestic and foreign policy choices will be definitely affected. This can be explained by looking at the policies in favor of the multinational and of the United States that have been adopted so far by the EU leadership, policies that go against the very interest of the Europeans.
Some analysts argue that an increasing number of EU citizens hold Brussels accountable for soaring food costs, economic stagnation, and deteriorating living standards across the old continent. The European Union has failed in many ways to deliver on its promises. Europeans' wealth has been gravely tarnished by more than 2 decades of tough fiscal measures and wild privatization and outsourcing policies, which have resulted in widespread company closures and massive layoffs.
L'asse tra Inghilterra.
The UK-US axis has been dictating the line, and practically all political parties across the EU, from left to right, have shifted ideologies and allegiances with the goal of remaining as close as possible to that line. The result is that this EU is anti-people entity. It wages lawfare against its own people, EU citizens' money is used to fund wars and the purchase of weapons, and not to support livelihoods.
EU officials have recently unveiled plans to boost defense production by promoting joint military purchases of European-produced arms among the member states. From February 2022 to June 2023, EU states spent more than 100 billion euros on defense acquisitions, with the US alone accounting for more than 60%. In 2022, more than 95 million people in the European Union, or 22% of the population, were at risk of poverty or social exclusion. Max Civili, Rome.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Deputy Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, Sheikh Naim Qassem, says there is no option but armed struggle to fight off the open aggression that the Israeli regime is exercising in the occupied Palestinian territories and elsewhere in West Asia. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has covered this story and tells us more. The top resistance leaders of Lebanon and Palestine assert that it is necessary to remain steadfast and work tirelessly to achieve the promised victory against the Israeli regime. The Secretary General of the Lebanese Islamic Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, and the Secretary General of Palestine's Islamic Jihad Movement, Ziad al-Nakhala, held a meeting recently. During the meeting, the two resistance leaders discussed the latest developments in the war-torn Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank, encompassing both political and on-ground situations amid incessant Israeli brutal attacks against the people of Palestine. Said Hassan Nasrallah and Ziad al-Nakhala also exchanged views about the condition of other fronts opened by the axis of resistance in support of the Palestinian people and resistance in the face of the Israeli regime. The discussions also touched upon existing possibilities and expected developments, whether on the battlefield or in political communications. Said Hassan Nasrallah warned it would expand the anti-Israeli front in the south if the occupying regime escalated its acts of aggression against the Lebanese territory and the Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Nasrallah praised the sacrifices of resistance fighters and said, "The wounds and blood have generated real achievements for our people and our country. Our responsibility is to preserve these achievements." On Israel's months-long savagery in the besieged Gaza Strip and the regime's sporadic shelling of southern Lebanon, the Hezbollah leader said, "The existence of Israel is a disaster for the entire region, and a fearful and deterred Israel represents a less dangerous and less harmful situation for the peoples of the region." Said Hassan Nasrallah added, "In the light of what is happening in Gaza, the Lebanese, Syrian, Jordanian and Egyptian national interests require that Israel emerges from this battle defeated and broken." Said Hassan Nasrallah said the exchanges of fire in Lebanon's south would stop when the aggression against Gaza stops. He added, "The resistance's job is to deter the enemy and our responses will be proportionate." Israel launched a devastating war on Gaza on 7th of October last year after the territory's resistance movements carried out a surprise retaliatory attack dubbed Operation Al-Aqsa Storm against the Israeli occupying regime. The Israeli military has also been carrying out attacks against the Lebanese territory since then, prompting retaliatory strikes from Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah in support of the Palestinians and their cause. The movement has vowed to keep up its reprisal operations as long as the Tel Aviv regime continues its onslaught on the Gaza Strip. The aggression against Gaza has so far claimed the lives of tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians, many of them women and children. The Al Masira television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. A high-ranking official with Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says there is no option but armed struggle to fight off the open aggression that the Israeli regime is exercising in the occupied Palestinian territories and elsewhere in West Asia. The Deputy Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, Sheikh Naim Qasem, said recently during a ceremony in the western village of Qabeiri, in commemoration of the fallen commanders and members of the resistance group, he said, "When armed struggle has its roots in ethics and faith, and its adherents are willing to make sacrifices, it will emerge triumphant, God willing." Sheikh Naim Qasem said his fellow resistance fighters are attempting to liberate mankind, adding, "Such freedom will come by through sacrifices and out of altruism. We will eventually witness an independent West Asia with the Israeli regime wiped off its face." The Hezbollah official said the surprise operation Al-Aqsa Storm by Gaza-based resistance factions exposed the frailty and weakness of the Israeli regime and drove it closer to downfall. Sheikh Naim Qasem added, "Israel, at the apex of its self-proclaimed prowess, murders civilians and children and is unable to confront resistance fighters. This behavior is indicative of its debacle. After more than 4 months, The axis of resistance is still steadfast and fighting to inflict painful losses upon the Zionist enemy. He said the regional resistance axis is resolved to liberate Palestine from Israeli occupation and aggression, no matter what the cost. The Deputy Secretary General of Hezbollah movement, Sheikh Naim Qassem, said, "The members of the regional resistance axis is of same and common ideas. All parties have been convinced across the resistance axis that Palestine serves as the compass and that the strong should help out the weak." Sheikh Naim Qassem added, "All the members have reached the consensus that the goal is the liberation of Palestine. We never care about the cost of supporting the issue of Palestine." Over the past several months, the members of the regional resistance axis have been engaged in a common drive against the occupying Israeli regime. Hezbollah, as well as Iraqi and Yemeni resistance groups, have been shoring up the drive by launching numerous operations against Israeli targets as well as American targets in protest at Washington's all-out support for the Israeli regime. Iran's Press TV has also covered the same story and tells us more. A senior official of the Hamas resistance group says the Palestinian resilience against the Israeli occupation can guarantee a potential agreement with the regime in the Gaza Strip. Osama Hamdan, a senior Hamas official based in Lebanon, hailed resistance as a solution to the war given Israel's long history of non-compliance with its promises. Osama Hamdan added, "The Palestinian resistance against the Israeli occupation is the real guarantee for a potential deal." He also lauded Hamas's Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, saying, "It made Israel and the United States realize that the axis of resistance is able to exert pressure with the aim of supporting movements in Gaza and change the political equations in favor of the resistance front." Osama Hamdan also gave a speech at the opening ceremony of the 24th edition of the Iran Media Expo in the Iranian capital Tehran. He hailed media's role in defeating Israel's narrative in the Gaza Strip, stressing that media coverage is part of the fight against the occupying Israeli regime. Osama Hamdan noted that media coverage is no less important than the war itself on the battlefield, as the Israeli regime is targeting journalists and media activists whose actions are important on the battlefield. Hamdan further stated that after 140 days since the beginning of the war, the situation of the resistance is better than what friends imagine. He said, "Our nation is standing firm," adding that resistance is a major player in shaping the region's future.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, is there any horror that the Palestinians in Gaza have not gone through since October? These people have been starved, denied water, electricity, gas, and at times communications. They've been bombed by planes, tanks, drones, snipers, and they have been kidnapped, raped, tortured, and imprisoned. And on Thursday, even they were bombed while in line trying to get flour for their starving families in what is being called the Flour Massacre. It's just another massacre in a long line of so many others in Gaza. All of this while there's still talk of a ceasefire, but no action of really implementing one. How many more Palestinians must be killed before the powers that be say enough? I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Montreal, author and political activist Yves Engler. And out of Tehran, Ali Salam, editor-in-chief, Basira Press.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with us. I'll start this off in Montreal. And Yves, on Thursday, the Flour Massacre took place where at least 112 more Palestinians were killed and over 750 injured. Officials of the Israeli regime have been very smug with their explanations and basically say the hungry masses, Palestinians, brought this on themselves due to attacking the humanitarian trucks. I mean, your thoughts on all of this and seeing that scene, what went through your mind?
They keep doing things that are even worse than one would imagine they could do. The bar just keeps going lower and lower. The Israeli propaganda response, the denying it, and then some of their spokespeople saying, oh yeah, we did kill some people, but they deserved it because they threatened us. And then seeing all these apologists for Israel's genocide on social media just denying it all happened. It's hard to wrap one's head around. There's complicity shared around all of the self-described democracies and human rights countries of the West are enabling this, starving people trying to get some food being mowed down by a occupying power that has been put them under siege for two decades, that drove them from their homes 75 years ago and has been regularly terrorizing Palestinians of Gaza.
Well, Ali, do you think the bottom line is that to the Western powers that be, Palestinians and the people of this region are basically seen as less than?
It's in their own words, as we heard from various statements, the words such as human animals, and some of them said that, no, we shouldn't use the term human animals because that's even an insult to animals themselves. So what is going on and what you and our guests have described is 100% deliberate. It's not accidental. And then when they lie about it, the lies are also deliberate. Their lies have been torn apart now. Even the one who concocted the lies of the mass rape story has had to essentially quietly admit that it was a totally incredible story. But that gets buried and that doesn't get shown in the front pages. But people are losing their accounts on social media for telling these truths. People are called, like, I don't even know, what are they calling, rape deniers or all these other types of terms. As the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, said, that if we don't expose the truth about these lies, and that there's no evidence for their claims, that it all comes from these dubious IDF sources, we can see the dead Palestinian children every single day. If there was really one single dead or beheaded Palestinian child that wasn't generated by some AI image generator, as was in one case on social media, they would have no shame in plastering it around the world and making it poster that they would show on all the screens in Times Square, and they would shine on the, I don't know, all the famous buildings in Europe with high-powered projectors. They would shove it in our face, but they can't. They only have hearsay. But all these people are dying and being intentionally murdered and mowed down based on these lies, as an excuse to cover up their pre-planned, premeditated mass slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza.
Well, Eves, can you think of any part of the Western world that if more than 30,000 civilians would have been killed, that nothing would have still been done by now to stop this murder?
No, I mean, there are lots of crimes in the imperial history. You look at what the U.S. did in Iraq in 2003. I mean, they hundreds of thousands, hundreds and hundreds of thousands were killed as a result. So
Western world, because I know, unfortunately, as was just talked about, in this part of the world, people seem to be disposable. But in the West, if something like this had happened, would they have allowed this to continue?
Well, we don't need to. I mean, we can just look at what they're doing with regards to Ukraine right now, where, you know, the UN says over 2 years, a bit over 10,000 Ukrainian civilians have been killed. Israel did that in, you know, probably the first 30 or 40 days of this onslaught on Gaza. You know, the Canadian government's reaction, U.S. government, is to pump in huge amounts of weapons, all kinds of sanctions on Russia, on and on and on. There is no doubt our political culture in Canada specifically, but North America, the NATO countries, treats Palestinians as to frame it as lesser is to use too light of language. I mean, the you look at a situation like the Israeli quote unquote hostages that are in Gaza. There's all this focus still put on this question, but this is like. This is completely irrelevant if you look at this issue from a big picture humanist perspective. I mean, there's thousands of Palestinian children who have lost limbs, and you don't even that issue is just never even like mentioned in our media. But we'll hear endlessly about some Israeli soldiers that are still being held, so that all the thousands and thousands of Palestinian prisoners. That they can maybe get the release of these thousands and thousands of Palestinians who've been kidnapped by Israel. All through our political culture. In this country, there's more focus on the feelings of some Jewish students at a university campus vis-a-vis a protest against the genocide than there is coverage of, 30,000 Palestinians killed. Like, that's more important than some like feelings of somebody. So, it all throughout the political culture, the racism is absolutely just, oozing. And no, there's no doubt that if there was, anything in the vicinity of what Israel's done happening to white people, to happening to our self-described allies, this would be, the outrage and the opposition would be immediate and would put a stop to it.
Right. Well, I mean, isn't it all quite ironic when it is the West which created the Zionist entity, the West supports Zionism, and the West also supported Nazism? These ideologies were created by them, but were used as an excuse to steal Palestinian land and to commit a continuous genocide against the Palestinians.
Absolutely. The supremacist mentality is something that basically dominates their thought. They just differ on who is the chosen people. Actually, I was listening to a very powerful speech from Sheikh Imran Hussein. And he was saying that this mental, spiritual, philosophical virus of this chosenism is what drives all the oppression that exists in the world today, that drives all the misery and bad things that we see in the world today. This idea that there is a group of inferior people and that some group of people are superior and they have a right to basically just do as they wish upon the so-called inferior peoples of the world, because either they're lesser humans in some cases, or sometimes they go even further and say that they're not humans at all, as is we're seeing here in the case of Palestine. So this is really a satanic ideology, because the first supremacist was Lucifer, Iblis himself, as the story in the Holy Quran demonstrates. So they can't claim that they're chosen of God when they're following such an evil satanic ideology. So they can only fool so many people for so long. But I think the world is actually waking up, and the fact that they're so masked off about it. If we can see all the people in Israeli Telegram chats cheering on when they see dead babies, when they see, like the other day, a man driven over by a bulldozer while he was still alive. They can't call themselves people of God when they're endorsing such wickedness and corruption on this earth.
Right. Well, Eves, the Israeli regime is not only dangerous for Palestinians, but to the whole region and world, as it has never had to abide by international law. Now, thus it bombs and assassinates at will. It is not only committing genocide in Gaza and murdering others in the West Bank, but it is invading the sovereignty of Lebanon and Syria and committing assassinations. Do you think that more countries are beginning to understand the dangers of this entity? And do you think that more countries will change their policies toward it?
Well, I think that look what happened, what's happening in Latin America. Colombia announced yesterday or the day before that they were no more arms to Israel. You look at what Lula, the president of Brazil, said about the genocide. There's no doubt that that's it's growing sentiment. I saw Nicaragua brought Germany is bringing Germany to the International Court of Justice for their complicity in the genocide. So the rest of the world, aside from a handful of North American former European settler countries like Australia and some Western European countries, the vast majority of the world has been hostile to Zionism and Israel for a long time, and that's growing. I think that the people are just appalled by what they're seeing. Leaders, powerful people around the world, even appalled. I think also it's interesting to see the developments within the imperial core. If you look at what happened in Michigan in the U.S. state in the primary, you had this really big support for the uncommitted. And this was a really grassroots campaign to oppose Joe Biden's genocidal policy. If you look at the election of George Galloway in Britain in the by-election a couple days ago, the people, when they have a chance to weigh in on this question, there's a lot of dissent here in Montreal. It's unprecedented, the level of protests across Canada. More 20 this tomorrow's gonna be 22 weeks weekends in a row of mass demonstrations against Canada's complicity in the genocide. So the opposition, even within those countries that are the ones that are heavily responsible for Israel's crimes, is growing. Now, the U.S. empire is powerful, right? So they have a way of protecting Israel diplomatically. They have a way of making it difficult for countries like Brazil or Colombia or Nicaragua to really, for that spirit of opposition to really grow, but I think that around the world, people and governments are just appalled by what Israel's doing.
Well, I mean, the majority of the population in Gaza is on the brink of starvation. The U.S. says it will start airdropping food. Why doesn't Washington just demand that the genocide end immediately, and why doesn't the U.S. demand the Zionist regime just let the aid trucks in?
This is just one big PR move to let off steam, because the international pressure and the international PR debacle that the Zionists have done has really been to their own detriment, but they're too arrogant and they're too, I mean, they're psychopaths. Who would kill this many people and not have a few screws loose in their head? So this is just something to buy a little bit of PR for the Zionist regime. I personally think it's a little bit odd that the United States, they actually did the airdrop already of 66 packages. I think, you know, anybody who's aware of the satanic numerology, I think that's a little bit odd for the U.S. to do after they support the genocide. This is, they're like basically stabbing the people in the back and then giving them a Band-Aid. It's incredibly hypocritical and sadistic, and it's as if they're mocking the Palestinians, whom they've killed in the tens of thousands.
Well, Eves, I want you just to think about these statistics for a minute. Since October the 7th, more than 30,000 people have been killed, and even more because, of course, unfortunately, there's so many still under the rubble. At least 12,500 kids have been killed, averaging about 85, 90 kids a day being killed. Your thoughts on the type of regime that could do this to begin with?
Well, it's a regime that's obviously believes in a supremacist ideology. These are Jewish supremacists, which has been what Zionism has been about for a long time. But these are real Jewish supremacist fanatics that are in charge. And alongside that is a government, a state apparatus that operates it with impunity. And it has been told over and over again for decades that it can basically do whatever it wants and it will have the backing of the powerful forces. And, you know, just a really concrete example of that, you know, when the International Criminal Court began an investigation in 2020 into Israeli officials' war crimes, the Canadian government delivered a letter to the ICC saying, do not investigate Israeli war crimes, and threatened to cut off Canadian assistance to the ICC, which was a significant part of ICC budget. That's a really concrete message to the Israeli government to do whatever it wants to Palestinians. And, you know, there's many, many, many other examples of that. And so that's the nature of it. I agree, it's unequivocally a sadistic regime. I don't think, you know, there is a logic, I do think, to what they're doing here. I don't think they believe they're going to defeat Hamas or wipe Hamas out. I mean, I think there's some small element of wanting to do that, and obviously to, you know, kill Hamas fighters and resistance fighters. Israel wants to do that and has had a modest amount of success doing that. I don't think it believes it can actually just, you know, crush Hamas. But I do think it wants to drive, you know, everyone out of Gaza. That's, if you care about a Jewish state, if your objective is a Jewish state, obviously the fact that there are more non-Jews in the region, that's a problem demographically for the Zionist entity. So if they could drive out hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, all of Palestinian population in Gaza, why wouldn't someone who you know, is concerned about having a Jewish state and having a state based upon Jewish supremacy, why wouldn't they want to try to do that? And I think that's part of what they're trying to do. It's horrendous. It's you know, it's completely supremacist. But there is a logic to it from the perspective of this European colonial supremacist outpost that we call Israel.
Well, Ali, are you optimistic about the possibility of a ceasefire taking place before the month of Ramadan, as Egypt will host more talks?
If I remember correctly, in 2014, during that war or that slaughter, although it's a mini at the time, I called it, and many other people were calling it a genocide, but it seems like a mini genocide compared to what it is today, unfortunately. The Zionists at that time had pledged to make, and it was during the time of Ramadan, I remember, because it was my first time as doing Ramadan as a new Muslim, They pledged to make it the darkest Ramadan in history. So I don't think the Israelis will have any kind of humanity. I mean, they don't have any humanity anyways, but they certainly won't extend it, perhaps not even for a PR win during the holy month of Ramadan. And I don't trust the Egyptians or the Qataris enough to broker an honest ceasefire that would not let the blood of all these martyrs go to waste. So I think the ultimate guarantor of any ceasefire will be the arms of the resistance, because they are humiliating the Zionist regime. How many billions of dollars are they losing per day just in the Zionist entity alone due to the situation in northern occupied Palestine, thanks to Hezbollah, and also the areas surrounding Gaza, as well as Yemen and Iraq's strikes against the southern tip of Eilat, I believe is the name. And then just the global ramifications on the shipping routes, thanks to particularly to Yemen and Ansarullah. So I believe that the pressure from the resistance will secure a type of ceasefire whose terms are beneficial to the resistance. They may not get 100% of what they're asking for, but they will get enough where it humiliates the Zionist regime, it secures a victory for their people, and the deaths of all these martyrs will not go in vain.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with us here on the Spotlight. Yves Engler, author and political activist out of Montreal. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basira Press out of Tehran. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kHz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Al-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdha' al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaik.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety,
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge, and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام على أئمة الهدى ومصابيح التجا وأعلام التقى وذوي النهى.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immati ad-du'ati.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.